Moving on, so if goods are produced at one location, then only variable cost to produce goods will be recovered. So now that is also possible. You have a one production facility, and this facility is serving to the multiple nation markets, you know, where you are there. Then what happens? Only the variable cost to produce that additional product is only taken into account. So that will further reduce the price vis-a-vis 105. Okay. Here assumption is that the fixed cost will remain as it is, even if the domestic market, so you are utilizing your facility, the fixed cost which you have to pay is very much going to be same whether you produce for external market additionally or not. So external market is burdened with only the variation in the cost, which is a variable factor based costing that you have to incur. So only the incremental cost for producing that additional unit for export market is only charged to the price, and that's how it is done for single unit producing for the number of international market. The advantages of this marginal costing, it's a effective way to penetrate the market without incurring loss. De facto, there is no loss, this thing, even if you do this for 105 and you survive for 3 years and you recover the required volume, you get the required volume, then you are not incurring loss. Unless something happens and within 1 year you have to wind off, then there may be some loss. Effective for penetrating the market. So in a market when you are entering new, you look like a competitive product and the brand, so that you get larger attention, larger trial, and therefore the acceptance. So penetration strategy as this thing is good, helps you to face competition profitability, you are able to fight with the competition and you still maintain your profitability. Okay. This is easy to determine, and then it is easy to determine. It's not a very rocket science. Finance people can certainly help you with, and it helps you to recover your investment. Okay. You recover your internal without suffering losses. So that's a scientific this thing to that. That's an advantage of marginal costing. There are certain disadvantages, however, which is difficult to later increase price. If people get used to that lower or an attractive price, and if you suddenly realize that they are sensitive to the price, it may become difficult for you to increase the price. Industry where cost of raw material is very high also cannot afford this method. So if the industry which requires a very high cost of raw material, where only marginal change in this thing is done to make the next product or the other, the byproduct, etc., there the marginal costing price cannot be, you know, implied. Because essentially you are selling an intermediary good, suppose, which becomes a raw material for the other industry, etc., then it may be difficult because your value addition is very marginal. Major cost is the cost of raw material. So then this method may become little unviable. It ignores the market dynamics. So you see, the market is always dynamic, agile, depending on the competitive pressure, may not allow quality to remain. Now suppose if you are not able to fight market dynamics, then you will start sacrificing on quality, etc. That will probably protect you in short term, but in long term it is not going to be helpful, because eventually your brand equity will get eroded. So we finished the concept of marginal costing. Now we enter what you call, there are certain documentation. One is a very predominant one, which is a letter of credit that one need to understand. It's a way the payment is facilitated when two parties effort to different international locations are getting into a business. Okay, it's a payment instrument. It's an instrument between the exporter and the importer. It's a commitment on behalf of the importer by the importer's bank to release the payment when exporter's bank provides them the required documental support that the goods have been satisfactorily delivered. Okay, there are various terms and condition that also the exporting guy's banker, exporter's bank, has to establish to the importing buyer's import bank, you know, that everything has been complied with. Then in that case, this bank stands responsible to release the payment. So first, of course, they will approach the buyer to release. If the buyer defaults, then the bank has to settle it, and then they will recover it from the buyer. It's a credit instrument. The importer's credit is used to obtain the letter of credit. So it's a credit given to the importer by the bank. importer needs to pay the fees to the bank for getting the letter of credit. So he will have to pay something to the bank. However, this is a very popular document. It is useful when you are new with the importer. So to protect your interest, the new exporter, when they are dealing with the new party, should insist on letter of credit, because this mechanism is so well established. It's a very old mechanism. Banks are familiar with it. Okay, it protects the interest of the importer as well. If suppose there is a trick being played by the exporter, so importer also protects his interest. It helps in both ways. How does the process go when letter of credit has to be issued? So importer has to approach his bank and seek that credit, and for that he has to seek the letter from the bank. Okay, bank will not just give it as that it is. In issuing bank transmits the letter of credit to the nominated bank of the exporter. So after due verification, allocation of the fund, etc., establishing that the sufficient fund is there, then only the letter of credit issued, and that letter of credit, the terms and condition that importer has laid down, that also is understood and incorporated, and that letter will be submitted to the authorized bank as appointed by the exporter. Okay, the exporter forwards the goods. So then on other end, what will happen? Exporter forwards the goods and the document to the freight forwarder. So there is a guy who is intermediary, who is taking the freight abroad. He is consolidating the all activity once the good leaves from the supplier's manufacturing or the godown. Post dispatch, exporter submits the documentation to the nominated bank. So whatever the terminology, Incoterms wise, free on board or insurance, CIF and whatever, that once it is complied and the ownership is passed on the hands of the buyer for the goods, then this exporter will dispatch all the required document. Post dispatch, exporter submits the document to the nominated bank. So exporter has to submit to his nominated bank that I have supplied these goods, I have complied with all the requirements, here is a documentary proof to that. The nominated bank checks with the compliance, so with the importer's bank, they call for the compliance check, etc. Okay, and when that compliance check happens and the buyer is given a chance to settle this thing, or bank settles the payment with the exporter's bank. Okay, and that's how the letter of credit goes. Here there are terms and conditions that bank plays, you know, has to keep in mind, because they are a custodian of each party's interest. Okay, so there are certain terms that the buyer has put in, so bank has to examine that has been done. They have to get a NOC or whatever back-end confirmation from the buyer. Okay, importer's account at the bank is then debited. So bank settles the payment with the exporter. Bank recovers that amount with the fees from the importer's account, which is already having a fund. The issuing bank releases the documents to the importer. So the issuing bank, who has sought that letter of credit, etc., and have all the documents, will release the documents to the importer. So that's the issuing bank, means the importer's bank provides the document to the importer to claim the goods. So now he has to claim the goods from the carrier. This transaction happens when the ownership changes the hand. Okay. After ownership changes, the payment settlement happens, on which the importer gets the document, and using that document, he can free his goods from the point where exporter's liability was ending. Okay. Types of letter of credits are irrevocable and revocable. Okay. Irrevocable letter of credit is no change can happen after it has been prepared in any terms and condition. It's a financial instrument used by the banks to guarantee buyer's obligation to the seller. So it's an obligation more in favor of seller, because buyer cannot change any condition after a letter of credit is issued. Irrevocable layer, because the letter of credit cannot be modified by the buyer unless both party agree to that, yani changes. Then only they may issue a fresh letter of credit with the change of this thing, or an amendment or addendum, so to say. The revocable letter of credit can be changed or cancelled by the bank that issued it at any time for any reason. So see, it's a risky thing. Okay, after you disembark, after you release the goods, and what if the LC gets cancelled? You lost control on the goods, you lost guarantee of your payment. So that's a little risky. So irrevocable letter of credit is generally preferred. So now we study the concept of dumping. It's a situation, as the name suggests, it's a negative term. It's a situation where exporter sells the product. Exporter is selling the product in the country where it has been exported at a price which is unbelievably lower than even goods that he sells in the domestic market. Or even in that country, the other competitors are not selling at that price. So that's why he is trying to create an unfriendly market situation due to various compulsions that he might have. So therefore, this term called dumping. There are three types of dumping that one can look at. One is a sporadic dumping. Okay, sporadic dumping is dumping when takes place occasionally. It occasionally happens, generally to sell excess goods. So many times what happens, either you got some order cancelled in the home market, or you have produced more than what you planned, etc. And therefore you are lending up or likely to lend up with the excess goods, and you do not want to keep your money invested in that, and you find that there is other market where this can be sold, but you want this to be immediately sold. So you therefore throw that goods in the other market at an unbelievably lower price, and there may not be any intention to continuously provide goods at that price. Then it's a sporadic dumping. Intermittent dumping, goods are dumped at a periodic interval. There is a design by which you dump the goods in that market at a lower price, at unbelievable price, so to say. And if there is a pattern, once in a month or 2 months or 3 months, etc., then there is a design. So that's an intermittent dumping. Long-term dumping, which is a continuous dumping, you continue to flout that price related norms, etc., either at home market price or the competing the importing country's market prevailing price of the other competitor, you continue to provide goods at a much lower rate, which raises the doubt in terms of your making even a profit on that. So that's a long-term dumping. You continue doing it. So that's a threatening the local market, and that's the time when probably the government of that country comes into picture, and then they levy what you call an anti-dumping duty. Anti-dumping duty, you would have heard that. So like US has put this on the Chinese steel, etc., because it threatens the US steel makers. So they call it the anti-dumping. Like India is also levied certain anti-dumping duty on goods coming from US. So idea is to see that the local this thing is protected, local manufacturers are protected. Okay, the government exchequer which loses due to the taxes that the guy will have to pay because he has declared the price itself so low. So those kind of losses also to prevent, government puts an additional anti-dumping duty on such goods or the such supplies. Now we get into the last and the important term called section called Incoterms. Okay, Incoterms, also known as international commercial terms. Inco, international commercial terms. This was introduced way back in 1936, and it is all related between agreed way of business between two international parties. Okay, and when it used, it clearly sets the responsibility of the exporter, the point at which the ownership gets transferred to the buyer, and then the responsibility of the buyer. Now, instead of getting into elaborate contractual this thing, etc., these terms are developed to facilitate a universal understanding. Universal understanding. Okay. It's a universal language. Responsibility of the administration of Incoterms is in the hands of International Chamber of Commerce, France. They innovate, they govern this. Okay, they look at new changing, dynamics, and if there is anything new required, then they invent that. And the terms in itself defines the set of rules and responsibility, set of rules and responsibility of seller and the buyer for the delivery of a goods under sales contracts. So as per the term, the rules and responsibility get set. So you see this Incoterm chart 2020, chart of responsibility, it is known as a chart of responsibility. applicable to both domestic trade and international trade also. So to say, this term are also used in domestic trade. Broadly has a three divisions: any transport mode, sea, land, waterways, any other transport mode. And then these are those terms: CIF, CPT, CIP, DET, DAP, DDP, etc. And in this side, there are those charges which get involved in the export of goods. Okay. Charges, fees, the packaging, loading, delivery to port, export duty, original terminal charges and blah blah, insurance and what not. Okay. Now, here what it means is given, and that sets the responsibility. That sets the responsibility of seller and a buyer. So X works, and charges are how X works, or FCA, so free carrier. So that's a carrier, up to carrier of your ship, and this is a cost on seller. So up to that, the seller has to bear the cost. Okay, free alongside ship, and free FAS, free alongside ship, means you are responsible to deliver up near the ship, not loading. Okay. So then it is defined whose responsibility is this, and from where the buyer responsibility starts. So here you see the buyer, free alongside ship till the packaging, loading charges, delivery, export duty, etc. Loading on carriage. Okay, loading on carriage is a buyer responsibility, and for there the buyer responsibility starts. So it clearly lays down, if you say CIF, cost, insurance and freight. So in that case, where seller responsibility ends and buyer starts. So here you see that this is right up to this, right up to loading, carriage charges and insurance. Taking an insurance is in the hands of the seller. Okay, freight and all also he has paid. Post which, destination terminal charges, delivery to destination and import duty, whatever that is to be paid on that goods, is buyer. So in short, friends, we will study some of the Incoterms. So I am stopping out here. It's a chart of responsibility. Various terms are defined by that body, and decide what it includes. So whose responsibility is this is clearly defined. Okay, so that's the Incoterms. Incoterms, this thing is divided and categorized into two different modes. Incoterms for any mode or mode of transport. So this is like a very generic this thing. So Incoterms for debt, delivery at terminal. So Incoterms for delivery at terminal, it is known as a debt. Seller responsible to deliver goods at the named terminal by the buyer. So named terminal within its country, and his country, say sailor's country. Terminal can be quay, warehouse, container yard or anything. So that's a terminal definition is given. Both parties should agree on terminal and exact location of that terminal. So that is very critical. Delivery, delivered at debt. Incoterms mode for any transport, any mode of transport. Okay, then I am explaining various terms under that. So the debt, this thing and all is not an explanation about Incoterms for any mode of transport. That's the one categorization that I have taken. It's self-explanatory. Under that, various terms are getting explained. Incoterms for debt, delivered at terminal. At this terminal point where seller completes delivery, risk gets transferred to the buyer. So here the goods are considered as moved to the buyer's hand. Buyer may be still abroad, goods have not left your country, but if the debt delivered at terminal is agreed upon, then the responsibility, once the seller establishes that he has reached the goods there, it transfers to the buyer. If it is intended that the seller is to bear all the cost and responsibility from the terminal to the other point, then there are alternatives. So terminal to the any other point, then there are other alternatives. DAP or DDD, delivered duty paid, as DDP. Okay, delivered at point, so that is additional cost that also has to incur will be on the seller. Okay, or delivered duty paid, so all duty that is to be paid, etc., has to be paid by the seller. Debt, delivered at place or a point, as they say, if seller agrees to bear the risk, because it's not just about, okay, instead of terminal I will further move the goods to the next this thing. then there is a risk, because till that time the goods is in his ownership, not transferred to the buyer. So if that is a case, he agrees to bear that risk and the cost of taking the goods from a terminal to the another place, then that's a DEP, delivered at place. X works is very simple. Buyer is responsible to collect goods from the seller premise. Seller says, I have produced, and he says, I have moved this into the my godown in my premise. The risk is transferred to the buyer. Buyer is responsible for full arrangement thereafter. Okay, free carrier. Here the seller agrees to hand over goods to the carrier that has been nominated by the buyer. Carrier being nominated by the buyer. However, duty is cleared for export. Duty has to be paid by the seller. So that is a free carrier. If seller assistance is needed by the buyer to get contract signed in such case, seller assists the expense of buyer and at his risk. And so there may be a contract needed to be signed that is prepared and entered about, which will clearly state what all costs will be absorbed by the seller, what all costs will be borne by the buyer, etc. So that's a free carrier. Carriage paid to CPT. Seller arranges to pay for the freight for the specific destination. So after you take goods to the terminal, the freight and a ship so and so has to carry these goods to the next country. So that cost is also paid by the seller. Risk in such case is moved to the carrier. So carrier takes the ownership of the goods from the seller. Risk belongs to now the carrier. Okay. CIP. In the previous one, the seller is free from the risk related to the goods. Buyer has still not received the goods. Ownership is not in the buyer hand. But CPT means the carrier takes the ownership. So if any in-transit damage happens to the goods, is the carrier who becomes responsible. CIP, carriage and insurance paid. Here, in addition to that CPT terms and obligation, seller is also responsible to ensure the goods against any loss during transit. So for which the seller has to pay that insurance premium. DDP, delivered duty paid. A seller is responsible to pay all the duties also. You know, gets the goods cleared at the importing country. So that's a delivered duty paid. So we have understood specific import terms for all kind of modes, any mode or modes of transport. Now we enter specific import terms for the sea and inland waterways. So this is only for the waterways. So FAS, free alongside ship. Here seller arranges to place the goods alongside the carrier post. So in the port also, along after the whatever goods you have to store for that, you know, day or two till the ship comes in, seller is responsible to place it alongside the ship when it is there, you know, receiving the goods. Okay. So here the for the place of goods alongside the carrier port, export formalities are cleared. So for making the goods legally getting exported, that is in the hands of seller. Okay. FOB, free on board. So here seller is not only responsible to have the formalities for export cleared, but place the goods on board the carrier. Okay. Whatever carrier that has been nominated by the buyer. So that's a free on board. Cost and freight. So CFR, seller must pay the cost and freight required to bring the goods to the port named by the buyer. So buyer gives the port of lending in his country. So till that time, all expenditure are paid by the seller. Risk passes over to the buyer when the goods cross the railing of the ship. Okay. Goods passes on to the buyer when goods land into the port designated out from the ship on the ground. Okay. CIF is cost, insurance and freight. Again, it says same as CFR above. However, the include the insurance against the loss of goods during transit till the buyer end. Till the buyer end. Okay. So though it is landed at the port of destination, but insured up to the goods reaching buyer's premise. So that's exporter. So now key points of exporting. We have completed what you call incoterms of different types. You need to get those ideas clear. For certain, this is probably the last leg where you have to understand certain key points for the exporting. export business is very competitive, wherein the market where you are trying to enter, it is not you, it is other people from your country is also trying to enter. Other manufacturer from other country is also trying to sell. So you understand that it's a very competitive market. Exporters are keen to thus accept any and every order. So there's a tendency to accept any and every order. This may be because exporter is facing either the slow growth in the home business, or there's the cash flow issues, etc. So that getting an export order may help him that way. Cost of production is not only growing, but getting more frequently variable. So to keep your utilization, when you have your plant utilization high, that means the cost is getting absorbed well. Now to get that plant utilization on the higher side, you need some additional order, which is not likely from the domestic market. Then also there is a reason for export business. Okay. On the other end, due to competing prices are getting shrunk. It's a competing prices that getting shrunk. Competition is gradually also reducing their pricing to remain competitive. Now that will strain your ability to charge price in the market. Forget premium. Okay. Thus it is required to monitor the cost. So constantly, those who are in the export business should have a complete eye on the utilization. That is one of your output utilization. Second is the cost. Cost is again like how can you minimize the fixed cost and how can you reduce your variable cost or the other overheads which is getting charged to your exports business, and thereby you are able to develop a very competitive price. Exporters regulation and import regulation. So that is also another thing. Various country regulation where you are, which is there imposed on you while you are exporting, there are incentives also given versus importing regulation. The country where goods is getting exported, the country where the goods is lending, there is a importing this thing. There also there are many formalities, regulations to be cleared. So there itself is a very challenging task. Quality of the product, packaging, etc. must meet that international standard of that importing country, for which you have to not only do research, invest and expenditure on that. Complete compliances as per the domestic and international norm, both. So you have to not only comply with your national norms and also international norms. Exporter should protect himself against payment related problem. Okay. So which payment mode to take, that's a big challenge. Must find a way to always have first hand feel of the export market where you are trying to export your good, rather than risking just doing the business otherwise. So that's another thing. So we have completed this chapter on pricing, understood various Incoterms, salient aspects of exporting, etc. Thank you.